Despite everything that has been said and the various suggestions that have been made for prayer, none of them may be of any help. That does not matter. What does matter is that you use whatever method of prayer helps you best. Ways, methods, or techniques of prayer are only means to an end. They are, in fact, no more than props to help keep your heart and mind raised and open to God. They are means to that end and should be used as such. There are no perfect means, just different means for different people at different stages of their spiritual journey. What helps a person at the outset of their journey may not help them as they get into their stride. What helps them when they're going downhill with the wind at their back may be of little use when they're struggling uphill with the wind in their face. What helped them in this spring might not help them in the autumn of their life. No matter what is said in this little book, then, or elsewhere for that matter, pray as you can, not as you can't. Whatever method of prayer helps you here and now to keep raising your heart and mind to God, while at the same time keeping distractions at bay, is an ideal method of prayer for you. Now be sure that you will never find any man-made method of prayer that will completely destroy the distractions that pester you at the best of times. In fact, you can't really pray without them. You see, if you ever find that they have completely disappeared, then you will either have fallen asleep or been transported into an ecstasy. If you've fallen asleep, then you're not praying at all, because you are doing nothing. And if you have fallen into an ecstasy or been drawn up into an ecstasy by God, you're not really praying, because God is doing everything. The place where our praying is done is between the sleep and the ecstasy, where we continually practice repenting as we repeatedly turn back to God, despite the distractions that try to make us turn elsewhere. Prayer is the place where selfless giving, that is the heart and soul of all prayer, is practiced, until, under the influence of the divine, human loving is brought to perfection. Whatever means of prayer helps you to do this, then, is good, even if it doesn't help anyone else. Whatever methods of prayer we might find helpful, they will get us nowhere if there is something fundamentally wrong with our attitude. Let me explain what I mean. Two main attitudes have dominated the approach to God in prayer throughout the history of Christian spirituality. Before the Renaissance, the older religious orders emphasized the action of God, while the newer orders, founded after the rise of humanism, tended to emphasize the action of man. Both are orthodox, but both have inbuilt dangers that have often led people into spiritual cul-de-sacs. Those who put all the emphasis on what God does can easily forget what they should be doing to cooperate with Him, and so fall into a sort of quietism. This leads to a type of presumption as they present themselves to God in prayer like suet puddings waiting to be soaked in syrup. On the other hand, those who stress the importance of what we can do can often forget what God does and easily fall into what used to be called Pelagianism. They act as if everything depended on them. It can lead to a sort of spiritual pride, to an arrogance of heart and mind, that destroys the prayer that they seem to believe depends more on their own endeavor than on God's. In order to avoid the danger of presumption, Cardinal Hume introduced the word trying into the traditional definition of prayer. In order to avoid the danger of falling into pride, I would like to introduce the word gently to stress that our endeavor will get us nowhere without God's help. If we get angry or upset at our failure, it's not because we've failed God, but because we've failed ourselves and the goal we thought we would attain by our own endeavor. Prayer is gently trying to raise the heart and the mind to God. But despite having a perfect definition of prayer, most of us will spend much of our lives trying to walk the spiritual tightrope between pride and presumption, continually falling off once this side, then the other side. Then in God's time, not ours, the Holy Spirit will eventually reward the person of goodwill who perseveres despite their human failures. They will finally receive the perfect balance that enables them to keep their hearts and their minds open to God, free of the pride or presumption that can prevent them receiving the love that they long for more than anything else. Since earliest times, serious-minded Christians have tried to find a way of observing the gospel precept to pray at all times. The Desert Fathers tried to observe it by taking a sentence or a phrase from the scriptures that struck them during the recitation of the divine office, or a short prayer of their own choosing that somehow summed up their deepest personal need. Then they would continually call it to mind and use it throughout the following day. Although the prayer may be conceived in the mind, it must be drawn down into the heart, from where it will rise to God. Now, by the heart, they understood not primarily the emotions and feelings, but as in the scriptures, the moral and spiritual center of a person's whole being. So prayer of the heart means the prayer of the united person, prayer in which the one who prays is totally identified with the prayer. Abbot Isaac said, "When you rise from your bed, let this prayer send you to your knees, and then send you forth to your work or business, and let it follow you all day." It may be a prayer like, "Lord, to the rescue," as suggested by Abbot Macarius, or, "O God, come to my aid, O Lord, make haste to help me," also suggested by Abbot Isaac. This was a prayer that Saint Benedict found so helpful that he insisted that his monks should recite it before each hour of the divine office. The simple prayer, "Jesus help," or simply "Jesus," developed into the Jesus prayer later with Saint John Climacus. "Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner." That is perhaps the best-known prayer of the heart that has been used down to the present day. St. Augustine was the first to call these prayers ejaculations, whilst later spiritual writers called them aspirations. In more recent centuries, such aspirations as "Jesus, mercy, Mary, help," or "Sacred Heart of Jesus, I put my trust in thee," often originated from popular devotion. When used properly, they still embody all the characteristics of the prayer of the heart. Whatever we call these short prayers, they can still help a person to aspire to the prayer without ceasing by helping to sanctify each day, making it into a continual offering to God.